Okay, so I have 3 o'clock on my clock here, so we may begin. So welcome everybody to this regular 3 to 4, 4:15 meditation class here at Dhammaloka Center every Saturday afternoon. And for today, we also started the Introduction to Meditation class. The reason we have those two classes is that some people find it difficult to sit meditation for such a long time as 45 minutes. And so for those who are just starting out, we have a second class for them, and so they can also learn some other basic instructions on how to meditate. But some of the people here have been meditating for years and they're still not enlightened. But nevertheless, they're very peaceful, and you learn something every time. And one of the things also, the benefits of holding a class like this where everyone comes together, it does encourage you to come and to spend the time meditating. If you try to meditate at home, sometimes there's many distractions, and many people in the street where you live, or even your other people who share the house with, they don't really understand meditation. They may have the TV on, or cleaning up, or mowing the lawn behind you. And so it's very difficult. So coming here together is helpful. And it's also that I start the meditation, as always, with a guidance. That guidance is usually on a little bit of body sweeping, being aware of just how you feel. But it's effective in beginning the meditation, so you're not thinking about too much. It's a deeper type of meditation on your body, but then naturally it proceeds to something much more profound all by itself later on. The most important part is you have guidance there. So I'll be speaking for the first 15 minutes. When we start the meditation, and as I'm speaking, that will actually mean it's, sometimes people get a little bit frustrated because they can't think about their dreams and fantasies and plans and stuff when I'm speaking, because that's the whole purpose of it, for me just to take over and just to tell you what to do, what not to do. And also it's the fact that just like a person who's driving a car, they have to learn first of all. The first part of the time they learn with a driving instructor sitting right next to them. And the driving instructor can just see what they're doing, give the right instructions, so they can learn how to be peaceful with the driving instructor right next to them. And of course, here the driving instructor is me, you can hear the voice, and it means that it's like a guided meditation to the very beginning. Those guided meditations are very helpful because it learns how to relax the body and at the same time take your attention away from all the other things you tend to think about in life. And if you take the attention away for 15 minutes, so you're not thinking about your family, your kids, your finances, or whatever else you want to think about in this world, it means that after I stop speaking, then the mind has just been almost set up that way. It's leaning in a certain direction and it blocks out just the opportunities to waste your time thinking and wasting a wonderful time to meditate. Also, you know, you come here for a purpose. Now, your purpose is to coming here is to calm your mind down. I don't know, many people have different purposes in meditating, and some of those purposes are to get healthy. And sometimes when it's to get healthy, you have a disease which is threatening your existence, then that's a wonderful thing, because you know, you don't mess around usually when you meditate. If you're quite healthy and you think, oh, I might as well think of this interesting idea or fantasy or dream, that time is not really a problem, you think you're going to live forever. But if something's happened to you and you really need to meditate and become peaceful, just that impetus is really helpful for you. But of course, here the impetus is, you know, just the peer pressure. You're here, and I'm giving the instructions, and I'm bringing you along the journey. And as you come along that journey, the mind does become quite peaceful. That's one of the reasons why many people say that when they are meditating, that the meditation is deeper when they do a guided meditation. But later on, when you want to meditate at home, it's wonderful to be able to tell yourself what you're doing before you start, why you are here. And if it's at home in a quiet bedroom or somewhere in your house, you tell yourself, this is a time I put aside for meditation. And if I fall asleep, or if I start dreaming, wasting time, or fantasizing, thinking, I'm just wasting the great opportunity to find peace and stillness. And even though I live in a forest, in a monastery, or other times in meditation retreat center, still the most quiet place I can find is my own room, my cave. And there I can just sit so peacefully and quietly. There's no sound outside. But I remember that this is important to make the mind even more peaceful. So, years ago I recall I'd make a resolution at the beginning of a meditation. What am I here for? What am I doing right now? Why am I crossing my legs, got my back straight and eyes closed, and why am I watching the breath? Why? And it's to find that peace and that stillness. And once you get that peace and stillness as your main aim, if you want an aim, then it makes it much easier to direct the mind. Am I fulfilling the purpose of this meditation? And sometimes even when you're watching the breath, but you have to hold the breath, and it's hard, and it's tough, and it's unpleasant. So that's not what meditation is all about. It's this calmness, this stillness, which is why for so many years I've used a simile of just keeping the water still. So water is like the mind. How can I keep it still? And just holding it tight, and almost forcing it, it never works. Trying to discipline the mind, telling it when it runs off to come back again, never works. But being kind to the mind, that works. After a while you understand why it works. Because if you're kind to your mind, the mind wants to stay with you. Like any other good friend, even like animals. If a person is kind to animals, you have a pet, maybe a pet for life, because they notice your kindness and they feel comfortable in your presence. And it's the same with whatever I'm watching my mind. If I can be with my mind and I'm kind to it, it doesn't want to go anywhere. It stays. And it doesn't just stay, you start to feel the stillness and the peace. It's one of the reasons why I try and emphasize that that's the main part of the meditation, the stillness, and see how still that mind can become, how deeply still it can become. It's one of the reasons why that even the term which we use in meditation, samadhi. Samadhi, you may read many Buddhist books. Some people just follow the English translation, which was done years and years and years ago, where they translated that term as concentration. It doesn't mean that at all. It means stillness. And stillness is far more powerful. And if you can understand what stillness is, you have much experience of inner stillness, you will find that it's not boring at all. Yes, nothing is happening, but the energy of the mind just keeps on building and growing stronger and stronger. And as it goes stronger and stronger, the awareness gets stronger. We have a great industry now around mindfulness. Buddhists invented it. Not invented it, but gave it the name. But more than that, we know more about it. and that stillness gets incredibly strong. And also, surprisingly, very joyful, really happy. When you start developing stillness, you'll find that the mind really starts to become enjoyable. You're sitting here and having a wonderful time. And I don't know why more people don't teach that. Anyone who wants corroboration of that, and I can show you suttas in the time of the Buddha, and they would actually say that people would go visit monasteries in those days, and all the monks were happy and smiling, nuns too. Why were they happy and smiling? And the Buddha said, because of that's what happens when you meditate. That joy carries on into your daily life. The whole point was, there is a natural happiness and joy which comes from a quiet mind. You know that when I decided to become a monk many years ago, that was one of the great incentives to actually define happiness inside. And that's one of the reasons why I had to find teachers or places where the monks who would teach me would be smiling. If they didn't know what they were doing, I didn't know what them to teach me. So little by little, when you learn how to be happy inside, you learn this meditation, be really still and peaceful and joyful. It's a tremendous thing. What happens is, you have the inner happiness, the inner joy, the inner silence, the inner peace. And as far as insight comes, insight, understanding, wisdom comes from listening to the world, listening to how your body and mind works, looking at how nature works. But many people don't get that wisdom because they're thinking too much. They're too active inside. And their joy is not strong enough to be able to see something for a long period of time without moving, and to dive right into it, to penetrate it. Stillness gives you the opportunity to penetrate. And that's where many insights come from. You don't get insights so much from learning. Learning is just finding out what other people see. This is your own knowledge, and always is accompanied by joy and peace, stillness. That's what this meditation does, and it's a beautiful path, and not that hard at all. Okay, so that's a little introduction, and many of you have heard that before, but one of the reasons I do it, because those who came on time, it gives you the opportunity to calm down before we start the real meditation. So, a few more people come in, I think, know you all, so please find a nice quiet place. Those who come again for the introduction to meditation class, the series of four lectures, that's in a different building, just to the right. So if you can find a place to sit, please close the door. So. And find a nice, quiet, comfortable place to sit. And with the eyes closed, again, because I'm guiding the meditation for the first 15 minutes, just listen. Find a nice, quiet place to sit, and a comfortable place. And as you know, you can sit on a chair, you can sit with your back against the wall, there are cushions. There are little stools, three-piece stool, which is also really comfortable. So find a place where you are comfortable. Never compare yourself to others. And when you've found that place, so close your eyes. And to make sure that you're comfortable, we do a body mindfulness. Sometimes we call it body sweeping, just because we move the focus of mindfulness on our body from our bottom of our feet eventually to our head. Other people start from the head down, but I always thought it would be better start from the toes, and then as you move up, you get greater awareness, greater ability just to connect with your body. And so when you get to the important parts of your body, the place where there could be sicknesses or tension, you're really more aware and more powerful. So, as I said, start with your legs. How have you got your legs positioned right now? And don't just gloss over this beginning part of meditation. How is your body right now? Especially your legs, your feet. And it's not just knowing. If you find that you can improve the feelings of comfort in your legs, then move the body. Adjust it. Sometimes you think, oh, it's not needed, but just a very gesture of moving to make more comfort is an acknowledgement of caring for your own body. Many people say they don't know how to love themselves and care for themselves. So you look at your legs and ask your legs, how are you? As if you were asking a good friend. These legs support you, transport you. They're really important. How are they? If you find you've got any tight pieces of clothing around your legs, unloosen them. If there's tension somewhere, maybe in your knees, and you feel that that's going to get worse as the meditation continues, then please adjust that feeling. Adjust that position, sorry. When you adjust it and it feels better, great. And also what I do, it's not just moving, it's just acknowledging. As you move the attention up your feet, past your ankles, I can feel the sensations in my legs, in the muscles of my calves. Just checking everything is okay. And as I go up, I relax. As you go up to your knees. Many people do have problems with their knees. Either accidents and vehicles or sports accidents. So as I pass my knees, I make sure they're as comfortable as I can be. And I give kindness to every part of my body which I'm watching. One part at a time. And that kindness, honestly, that really does relax the body and create health. It gets rid of aches and pains and tensions. And go past the knees, up to the thighs. Feeling everything, not rushing. So I'm feeling everything. It's like everything just relaxes. Tightness is ease. Tensions disappear. Everything is loose and open and free. I get to the butt. I always make sure that my butt is well adjusted on the cushion or the mat. Because if it's not, you're going to get very stiff and sore later on. Sometimes people's legs fall asleep, which is kind of unpleasant. If you put your butt in a good position to begin with, that problem doesn't occur. And then from the butt I go up my back. How does your back feel now? that people have all sorts of ideas of what's the best position for your back. The best position is not the same every time. You find what is most comfortable. If you're sitting on a chair or leaning against the wall, it's fine to lean against the back of the chair or back of the wall. It's fine to have the back straight. Which one do you prefer today? You find out. It's an exercise in mindfulness and kindness. You're caring for your body. And that same effort, energy of kindness, you'll later on in a few minutes, you'll focus on your mind. But it's easier to focus on your body first of all, because you can see what it does to your body. He gets the best possible posture for today. And I also go up the front of my body, or rather the inside. Because there's many organs, important organs. You may come here with some sickness or disease. It's normal. But as you go up your body, if you find any place in your body, any organ inside, which is a bit tight, aching, painful, just stop there, pause there for a while. And if you pause there for a while, give it kindness. And you find the tension tends to ease off. You do feel more open in that part of your body. And often you feel warm there. You're allowing the body's own healing energies to go to where they're needed without blocking them out. And that's where a lot of great healing happens. And when you get to the top of your body, to your shoulders, you relax those shoulders. There's many nice exercises to do. I imagine my shoulders like two groups on either side of the spine, as strings representing the muscles. Pull tightly apart. Stretched under tension. How do you release that tension? You imagine those strings and you imagine letting go of both ends. Letting go. So those strings have no tightness at all. And just the imaginary exercise, the visualization, feeling it. You know, that works. You feel the muscles losing the tension, becoming all loose and at ease. It feels good. And then you go down your arms, pass your elbows. If any of these places you've had injuries and they're sore, just pause there, stay there for a while, and give it kindness. How do you give it kindness? Experiment. Try this, try that. Until you feel that kindness, what it does, it eases everything off down there. Everything feels safe. You lose your fear of that experience, that feeling. Everything feels nice and comfortable. Just like a child would feel tense for some reason or another, they're afraid or something. And you're with them, stroke their hair, reassure them that's your daughter, your son. And they're so reassured that they soon relax to the max. That's what I do to all these parts of my body. get down to my wrists and my hands. I don't know why I do this, but every time I do this here, when I get to my hands, I always realize they're not in the best position. So I change them. Now my hands feel great. Simple acts of kindness to your own body really work. And when my arms and hands are in a good position, go back up to my shoulders and my neck. This time of the year I have hay fever. I can feel the tickly sensation in my throat. I'm mindful of it, but not just mindfulness, the kindness as well. So I called it kindfulness, being with it, not afraid, and knowing how to relax that itchiness. You ask me what I'm aware of right now, that's what I'm aware of. There's the itchiness in my throat. Hardly anything else. Relaxing it. So it's not so much of a problem. And I go up to my face. And relax all the muscles around my eyes and my mouth mostly, and my nose. Forehead if you want, but my forehead is usually really comfortable. Wherever I can find a disturbing feeling, I'll go there and relax it all. Until you get to the point that everything is totally at ease. And when the face is at ease, that does affect the emotional world. And relax around the eyes. Relax around the nose and the mouth. Everything is just peaceful. And that's an emotional feeling. And last, before I leave my body, I just notice the whole body, everything joined together. Instead of watching it in parts, joining it together from the toes to the tip of the head with the itchy throat in the middle. I've cared for it as best I could. And relax it. It's like the whole thing is just so comfortable. Because it's comfortable, it feels good. There's always a pleasure, a joy associated with each stage of meditation. And it's just a stage of a relaxed body. And the reason I point that out is once you can taste that joy, once you know what I'm talking about and you can be aware of it, it's pleasure. It's easy to do. And you get deeper into physical relaxation. And for the body to disappear as you look inside the mind, that's very, very helpful. And then as you go inside, for those who don't know what to do to be able to be aware of your mind, simple question, how peaceful are you? From 1 to 10. One is really incredibly peaceful. 10 is agitated. And notice what causes agitation. Why are people at peace? A lot of it is just being afraid to stay in this present moment. By noticing the joy in the relaxed body, you overcome the fear of meditation. Meditation is pleasant. It's one of the safest things you could ever do in your life. You are happy to be here in this moment because it feels good. And that mindfulness of the joy of this moment means you don't have to go planning. Now is where your future is being made, right now. So stay here with kindness, caring. It's for the past. Disappeared. It's gone. You do. This is how you become free from your past. Noticing the joy of being present. And you learn much more from the present, from now, than you can ever learn from the past. You also notice the more peaceful you get, the more silent you are inside. You understand what silence is. You're experiencing the world. You're listening to her. You're not talking back. And it should soon become really enjoyable. You don't want to think, you don't need to think, you don't need to give things names. You're listening, still. And if you want to watch your breathing, now's a very good time. The breath is just always there. You're just allowing yourself to walk with the breath, as it were. Breath goes in, breath goes out. You just, as if like you're holding hands, walking together, being with the breath, and getting more and more calm. Now I've talked enough. I'm going to be quiet now until the end of the meditation. I'll let you know because I start talking about a minute before the meditation finishes, then I ring the bell. It's in about 20 minutes' time. It's getting close now to the end of the meditation period. How do you feel? How peaceful are you? And why? Please enjoy the last minute of the meditation. The enjoyment encourages you. It was realized the value. What you value, you'll keep on practicing. Ring the gong to end the meditation. Ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. Only when the last ringing vanishes, only then come out from your meditation. And as you come out, please smile. Should be easy to do. Oh, you got questions now? Hi. Very good. Oh, that's nice. So I have 5 questions here. From Sri Lanka, from India, from unknown place, from New Zealand and from Indonesia. This is always live streamed, so it goes to many places who don't have the good fortune of having a good center where they can come. From Sri Lanka. I feel like crying for no reason sometimes. Every month this occurs repetitively. I can't break the pattern. Could it be due to past issues happened a long time ago? It's a question we got yesterday. Similar question. There's nothing wrong with crying. Don't try and break the pattern. Enjoy it. Nothing wrong with it. So, carry on. It's just the attitude, the reaction we have to things. So often in life that I don't know why we're sometimes embarrassed what people think of us. And people just, they're quite sympathetic if you start crying. They feel arouses compassion. You get much more compassion from others. It'd be wonderful if you give half that amount of compassion to yourself and just cry. From India, when you mention the Sama Samadhi, the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path, as right stillness. Could one also interpret it as right silence, where the mind is fully aware and absolutely silent? Silence is a good translation too, but the stillness, the right stillness, you get so still that things disappear, they vanish. That's what happens with stillness. The obvious example is if you have a computer screen, you don't click any buttons. After a while, the screen turns off, it's silent. That's actually how this happens. So little by little, the stillness is much better than silence. Silence is just starts off with sound, but also with using the idea of thoughts and reactions as being like a sound happening in the mind. We think in words, and words are part of sound, which is one of the reasons why the silence is mostly just associating the turning off of one sense. But to be able to turn off all the senses through stillness, and that is very powerful. And apparently that even the Chinese understood samadhi means stillness, nothing moves. Because the Chinese did some very good translations of the very earliest sutras, took them over into China a long time ago. Still they haven't been changed, so we've got a good idea of what this word meant to people 2,000 years ago. From unknown, can you please explain how does self-love exist in oneself? Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to realize the truth. It's the kindest gift you can give to yourself. So it's understanding just what love is, and just we use these as approximations. When I was a kid, I was taught the law of gravity was what goes up comes down. It's not quite correct, it was very useful to know. And then later on you had Newton's law of gravity. The objects attract one another to the, the product of their masses divided by the square of the distance apart by the universal constant of gravitation. Not just what goes up comes down, because sometimes if you throw something up fast enough, like a rocket, it just goes outside the solar system. So then finally, you got to, as far as I got any with gravity, was that gravity is explained by Einstein's theory of rule of relativity. Einstein's not special, but general theory of relativity. Which is more complicated, but it's almost like saying that what we experience as gravity is much more profound. Which one is correct? Depends on what you're doing. The same with self-love exists. Self-love does exist. You can understand what it means. We give it that name. It's not the accurate name, but it's good enough. What it means is that you're giving the loving kindness not to all other beings, but you're giving it to yourself as well. It's something which, I don't know why people keep missing this. May all people be happy and well. We chant in Buddha's teachings, that means all people, yourself and others. For some reason we miss ourselves out. And so what we do is we just balance it. By saying self-love, all that really is doing, you're just balancing it, others, me, the same. And it's something which is important in our world. We always treat ourselves more harshly than we treat any other person, usually. And that's one of the reasons why, just treat yourself like others, no more, no less. And from New Zealand, I've read the hearing sense goes out in first jhana, is this right? Yes. Could you speak about what happens to the five external senses in first jhana? Yeah, they stop, they cease for a while. Oh, brilliant that is. You can't see anything. Now, this is just one little story which explains this really well. When I was meditating, still as a student, in a Zen monastery in the north of England, I didn't know what I was really supposed to do. But I was asked to, with everybody else on this weekend retreat, and I always remember that because I was still very active sensory, and that weekend, there was a concert by the Rolling Stones in the town I was in, and I had a choice, go to the Rolling Stone concert or go to a retreat. I went to the retreat. You always hear the Rolling Stones later on. On this retreat, only a weekend retreat, we had to sit with our eyes open, staring at a wall. Weird, but give anything a go. And then just when I was watching that wall, my eyes open, I knew how to relax. My body was at ease. And I wasn't thinking, I was mindful, I was in the present moment. And then, staring at this wall, eyes fully open, the wall vanished. It disappeared. It was gone. Weird, but really fantastic. It's nothing supernatural. All it was, I learned something from that. It's just nature. Is if you stare at something for long enough, you're not moving, it disappears. It's the old, what I said earlier. If you don't press something on this computer screen, it turns off. If nothing happens when you're watching sight, sight turns off. Simple as that. The senses don't go anywhere, they're just clicked off. It's the same with sitting pretty still. Don't know about you, but I've been meditating for a while now, so you can sit still enough. The body vanishes. Can't feel it. It's not there. And that was really useful in those times when I was a young monk, when all these mosquitoes were biting you in Thailand. Now, this is no joke. It's like many, not 100 at the same time, about 50 or 60 at the same time. And it was really disturbing. And that was every evening when we started off this monastery there. And I just went inside until the sense of physical touch just disappeared. It was so cool. I could just meditate there a couple of hours, nice and peaceful. And the weird thing is you get these really great side effects when the sort of the body disappears. And so you can't feel the mosquitoes biting you, but the weird thing is they don't bite you. It came out afterwards, and you know, my arms, they're just like bare shoulders, bare head, bare arms. Usually have lots of bumps when a mosquito bites you. No bumps at all. They're all gone. I thought, wow, this is the power of samadhi, of stillness. But it wasn't that, it was just nature. The mosquitoes in that part of the world were attracted to carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. The more you metabolize, the more the mosquitoes knew you were there. Simple as that. So I wasn't metabolizing very much. So the mosquitoes couldn't find me. So they went to the monk next to me instead. Probably, I don't know. That was really great. So the sense of physical sense disappears. And then, of course, smell and taste, that's easy to get rid of. But the sound is quite difficult to get rid of. It's one of the reasons why if any of you get into a very deep meditation and you've got to come out for some reason, then just let your loved ones know that you're perfectly healthy. And the best way to get you to come out is actually to talk to you, right in your ear, kindly. It's time to come out. We're closing up the Buddhist center. If you don't come out now, you'll be locked up until next week. And that works. It's how you get people out of even deep hypnosis, out of sleep. You use the alarm clock to get you out. So that's actually how we come out of the first jhana, and the hearing sense goes. What a wonderful thing it is that all these things can disappear. Yay! Because the mind is much more enjoyable, not sort of the five senses. And then when the five senses are gone, you're not sort of unconscious. All your energy goes into that sixth sense, the mind. The mind is just incredibly beautiful. It's gorgeous. And then you understand something, a lot about the nature of the mind, what it is. Anyway, I'm into this. Okay. Ajahn, in Anguttara 6.14, it is said that conceit, I am, is the escape from doubt and indecisive. Would you please explain what this means? Thanks, Ajahn and the BSWA. That is weird, because I've got to look at the... Okay. Indecisive, I'm not sure what the Pali word is. If you want to ask questions about that, then put the Pali in, because that makes it much easier. There's so many different translations, and it's the Pali, which is the one I shall know best. But I think what it is, this is, they say, escapes. In its first part here, escape, because people said, oh, you monks are just into escapism. So yes, you understand, well done. If you were in a prison, wouldn't you try and escape? I mean, just in a really bad prison and a really This is, we have a prison of suffering. We try and escape from these suffering prisons we make for ourselves. And I think what they mean here, it's not like I am, it's just, I think this is a bad translation, I think, but the conceit I am is still held by people who are in, who are non-returners. They haven't got to full enlightenment yet. And so it's really meaning, as far as I suspect here, that this is when you have things like doubts. That's part of, even being a stream winner or a once returner. Actually, not really once returner, stream winner. But to move from that into non-returning, you still have I am. It's just what happens. It's not you use I am to overcome the doubt, because this is just an old thought. It's not true. And what happens is they have this beautiful simile, which I adapted, was that if you wash your robe, because my robe was washed this morning by Nicholas, I think he's gone to Bodhinyana Monastery now, and after it was washed this morning, it still smelt of the washing powder. That's what happens. But now, it's mostly gone. And that's a simile which the Buddha used, but he didn't use washing powder, he used another substance they used to wash robes in those days. It still has like the odor of the sense of self. So once one is a non-returner, state of close to enlightenment, the third stage of enlightenment really, but close to full enlightenment, it means that one still has the odor, it's like you washed your mind, and you've just got a little bit of last sense of I am left. But that's going to go pretty quickly. Just like the smell, fragrance, when you wash a robe or wash anything, stays for a while but then soon disappears. That could be what you mean there. But when you have sutta quotes, please do the quote in Pali if possible. Then it's much easier for me to answer. Okay. So there we go, it's 4:15. And are there any questions from the floor? If not, great, because at 5 o'clock I'm going to another house blessing. I'm trying to fit them in whenever I can. So we can actually now bow. Sorry? Quantum physics? Oh, yes. If sometimes it's quantum uncertainty which creates the possibility of things moving, weird stuff happens. It's almost like, this is not a joke, that Murphy's Law, if it can happen, it does happen. If it's allowed, it works. And so this is sometimes some things which happen. Spontaneous particle creation. Antiparticle and particle. Boils a little bit of energy. But then just all comes back together again afterwards. But that's nothing to do with the meditation, so what I'll do now, we will keep my promise, we'll bow 3 times. And then if you want to ask that question, come afterwards. Oh.